Hello, this is Producer Ben, and I just wanted to come on real quick and ask that if you could please leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps us out a ton. We really appreciate it. Please enjoy this episode.
This is Christine, and on this episode of Honest to God, we dive into the wide world of environmental sustainability. The secular world would like you to think that they have the solution to saving the planet by completely removing ourselves from nature. But what they don't know is that God created nature for a reason, for us to participate in it. And if we can learn how to get back into the world, then we might just be able to save our planet. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome. Super pumped to be here today. You are listening to AM 1160, The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. This is Honest to God, and Grace just looks tickled to death to be in the studio today. I'm so glad you're here too, Grace. You're rocking, you and Mackenzie are rocking the Lays today.
Because we love the environment.
Yeah.
Right.
And flowers.
And there's nothing that says I love the environment like taking something that grows naturally and instead of putting that on you, making the same thing out of microplastics that are never going to break down and wearing them around your neck.
I'm trying to spread awareness. Okay. Yeah,
great. No, but we are going to be talking about the environment today. We're going to be talking about environmental sustainability. And I'm actually, even though it's a little off brand for me, I'm super excited about this episode. I got a lot to say. I got a lot of thoughts. And
cool.
I'm pretty pumped. Everybody here is a veteran, right? We got Christine, we got Patrick, we got Grace, we got Mackenzie. Producer Ben is here.
As always.
And then to my left is a vast expanse of empty nothingness that may or may not have producer Benny over in there.
Show notes Benny.
I'm sorry.
Producer Ben.
Not show notes Benny.
That's right.
So super pumped to be here today, guys. It's going to be a blast. Would anybody like to kick us off in prayer? Mackenzie, you look ready to go.
Sure.
All right.
In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Dear Lord, please lead this conversation and allow for a more deeper understanding, protection of what you have created for the world that we live in. We love you, and our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
Amen.
Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Wait, good recovery there at the end. I like that. Yeah, take that, mega church pastors. When we run out of stuff to pray about, we just bust out one of the 10,000 prayers we memorized for three.
Perfect.
I love it.
It was like Hail Mary, Our Father. Which one?
I always roll with the Hail Mary, but I appreciated the Our Father there. Yeah. You could have mixed it up a little bit. You could have done like a combo. Glory be. A combo where you switch midway. That'd be cool. You should have done it in Latin. I know you know all those prayers in Latin, Mackenzie.
You know
them. RCA doesn't play around. You got your own. All right. So speaking of Latin is a language that was spoken by people who are dead, which will happen to the planet if the environment isn't sustained, which brings us to today's topic.
Environmental sustainability.
Heck yeah. All right, cool. Did you like that? That was good.
Okay.
All right, cool. We're going to do one fun fact real quick because everybody's already been here. Producer Ben's going to give us a fun fact. And then we're going to get started. So, Christine, you mind kicking us off?
Sure. One fun fact about me.
Yeah, please.
One fun fact.
I like the idea of it just being one fun fact in general, though. That'd be kind of funny. Just tell us something interesting.
One fun fact is that sharks are finned for their fins. And so we need to be careful when we go to the grocery stores. We should really make sure. This happens more in Latin America. You could be buying shark meat and it's like labeled a fish, like certain types of fish, mm-hmm. like bolillo. There's all these types of names that they put, but it's actually shark meat. And so basically that's a fun fact. Like they're highly desired in Asia and Asian countries. I know this isn't really that fun of a fact, but that it's just something I'm passionate about.
Cool.
Shark fins, yeah.
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm pro sharks keeping their fins.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of those fins staying right where they are.
Look better with them on.
They do. Nearly as scary without fins.
Yeah, exactly.
They just look like, okay, now we're done. All right, Patrick, what you got?
I just came back from the Holy Land.
Heck yeah.
Nice. Hence why I'm sporting this Palestinian scarf.
Nice.
But, yeah.
I like it. It's a good look.
It is a good look. Is that, what is it? It's not a shemagh. What's the?
I forget what it's called.
It's got a cool name.
It's a really long word that I can't pronounce, so I'm not going to try.
Awesome, Grace. What about you?
I was thinking about. I think I've talked about some of my travels and stuff and other fun facts, but I don't think I've specifically mentioned that I've been to the Giant's Causeway in Ireland, which is pretty cool, or Northern Ireland. Mm.
So, and I always thought the Giants were in San Francisco, but you're saying that there's a
They're actually in Ireland too, building really? Causeways and stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I knew San Francisco, knew New York, but I didn't know there was another one over there. Cool. All right, Mackenzie, what you got?
Mine seems really random, but my fun fact would be that I have always been a sock sleeper. I sleep with socks on.
Oh, me too.
And it started because when I was little, I was like so that terrified that little witches would come out of my closet and tickle my feet in the middle of the night.
No, that is valid, though. That makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Not like eat your toes tickle. Or just tickle.
Sounds kind of like the world's best haunting. Kind of cute. I used to always talk about, we have something living in the walls at my rental house right now.
Nice.
And I don't know what it is.
You named it?
It scurries around. And so we've been talking about like the best case scenario for infestations, right? Like if you have to have an infestation of something, what do you want it to be? And so far, the one that I think is the best would be koalas.
That
wouldn't it be so cute if you came home and you turned on the light in the kitchen and a bunch of koala bears just like scattered away, all clumsy and dumb koala bear looking? Yeah, that'd be pretty great.
What would be the worst?
It's probably like the mice that it is. No, but if it is actually like what, like the worst thing it could possibly be would be like, I don't know, black mambas or something.
Yeah.
Or witches.
Yeah.
Or witches that tickle your feet.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
I have weird opinions too on like tiny cryptoid humans and whether or not they exist in the woods, but that's not for this episode.
Like little gnomes.
So, yeah. Dude, I got some stories.
A picture of Costa Rica, and I'm like, this is not real. They're like, I swear I saw him.
Dude, I got some weird stories about
it. Have you seen them? John Henry,
we should do a cryptid episode because I have some serious opinions. I've told you about the goblins that lived in the woods behind my house.
The goblins?
Yes, I have. We had goblins.
Are you referring to your children right now?
No.
Because I do know that your son likes to camp outside.
No. He lived for 8 months in a tent, 100 yards deep in the woods behind my house.
Your son?
Yeah, my son did.
He didn't come back to the house?
He was 8 years old. I made him come in for dinner and I made him come in for night prayers. But other than that, he was outside.
8 months?
No.
For 8 months.
8 years old.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
By himself?
Yes.
Oh, my
gosh. Yeah, it was weird. No, I should not have let him do that.
that's an environmentalist right
that
there.
Yeah.
Thank
yes,
you for bringing it back and giving me an out on the goblin thing.
I love
ben,
it.
Ben, you got it. You have a fun fact. What you got?
All right. I'm going to do one fun fact about gingers.
Oh.
The ginger gene, or the M1R gene, can lay dormant in a family for many generations.
That's scarier than the witch's feet.
It is very scary. So you could think there's no redheads in my family. None at all. And then, boom. You have a redheaded kid, which is exactly what happened to my parents.
Have red hair.
No, none of them do.
Yes, they do.
None of them do.
Your grandparents either?
No.
Wow.
No grandparents,
but
no cousins.
Both his mother and father have red hair.
They absolutely do not. My mom has naturally blonde hair.
It's very reddish blonde.
Strawberry blonde.
Yeah. All right. So I want it on record for all of our dear listeners across the globe to know that I know more about Ben's parents than Ben does because they have red hair.
What's my dad's favorite color?
Red.
Trick question. I don't know that.
All right. So anyway, let's get back to the environment and start talking about that. And I am interested in talking about this because I feel like as a pretty conservative, not necessarily saying I'm aligning myself with any American political parties, but just conservative, traditionally minded guy. People oftentimes assume that I have this like anti tree hugger. I literally had this conversation with a guy the other day. He told me he was a vegan, right? Mm. And he like looked at me and I was over at, it was a birthday party or something. And he followed it up immediately. He's like, I'm a vegan. He paused, looked at me and he said, but it's not because I care about animals or anything. I'm like, what? Why did you feel like you needed to qualify that with it? Like, that's cool. You want to be a vegan? Be a vegan. But anyway, I have some takes on this that I don't think are real in line what people tend to assume about me. I would like to start though, because you've talked about this before, and I don't know your pedigree in this. I don't know why you're here exactly, but can you tell us why you're here and why this topic is one that you wanted to be a part of and that Janice said you were somebody worth bringing on?
Yeah, sure. So I actually studied environmental management and sustainable development as my master's degree. And I've always been a very passionate environmentalist, ocean advocate, ocean guardian. And I'm interested in like your take too, what you just said, because I wonder why the two spaces of being faith-based or maybe more conservative, traditional, right, and being environmental have to be separate, because right, to me, they're not.
I agree.
And for so long, I was like, you know, growing up in college and stuff and around a lot of these environmental circles that were very much secular. And it wasn't until, you know, 2 years ago, basically, when I had my reconversion coming back to Christ in a stronger way, that I started really opening my eyes to some of the lies that I had fallen into. Sure. One of them being vegetarian and a vegetarian diet, which we can get into later. But I have all these things to say about it. Patrick was a big catalyst in bringing me back to the light as well. My diet changes, like I'm now eating meat. And so, yeah, it's just a passionate topic that I have of like caring for the earth, caring for creation, but also also helping people understand that being faith-based and a believer in Christ doesn't mean you don't care about the environment, and vice versa, being environmentalist and caring for earth and the animals and, you know, justice for all doesn't mean you should not believe in God.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And there's a number of topics like that, that we can get into in the future. And I always draw that distinction when I say that I'm a pretty conservative guy, which isn't a surprise to most people, but I say I'm conservative, but I'm not tying myself to the mast of the Republican Party or anything, right? Because I consider myself conservative in that I am an Orthodox Catholic who takes mm-hmm. the teachings of the church seriously. And neither of the major political parties in the United States has any monopoly on the on
anything.
Yeah. But on orthodoxy, right? In particular. And now, obviously, there are some big issues that mean that I tend to vote a certain way for sure, especially with pro-life issues and things like that. But does anybody have any thoughts on why we draw that dichotomy, right? Between why it seems so bizarre to say, no, I'm pretty conservative. Also, I care deeply about God's creation. What are your thoughts? What do you think, Mackenzie? Oh, sorry, Patrick.
Well, go for it.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think with scientism, I think mm-hmm. what it did is mm-hmm. it separated the human out of reality. So we look at the environment how it should be as if when people are not there, and that's what we view as the pristine environment, right? Like we take out the person and that's how it's supposed to look mm-hmm. like. And so we ended up living in the world like these observers instead of being part of the world, right? So that's where it comes, as an example, like someone who I would say hunts knows the land a lot better and has a lot more respect for it because he would like to come back and hunt again, or that's a source right. of food. Where a park ranger that just went to the school, I mean, he has no, he has nothing necessarily there. His only care is his cares for the environment, but it's based on the scientism that doesn't right. relate with reality of how that area works.
And define scientism for us, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, it's this materialistic view that the only thing that exists is what's material, and the only thing that can be studied. So like you can throw metaphysics and spirituality out of all of it. But it's come to such an extreme where that in itself has become a religion, like a spiritual thing, ironically totally. Enough. Yeah.
I would also say colleges, like just because that's what happened to me. I went to college. I grew up Catholic, but I went to college and I was so exposed to all these groups that weren't rooted in Christ or faith at all, because I went to a public college, Florida State, and unless you're going to a Catholic college and it's like really rooted in Catholicism or whatever, Christianity, you might not be getting a lens of what Christianity is in relation to creation and the environment and science, because it is one, you know, one and the other. And so to me, that wasn't, it was like two worlds. Like I was right. living two parallel lives and I didn't think I could unite them or be one person. And so I think a lot of people fall into that in college, just a lot of like secular pushing agenda in college.
Yeah. And maybe, and I don't know the whole history of the environmental movement or whatever, but when I think about like these great environmentalists that I really respect, I'm thinking about people like Teddy Roosevelt. I'm thinking about people like Leopold. What's his first name? Sorry. But anyway.
Theodore.
Yeah. The guy who, yeah, he's a big environmentalist from that same era, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about these guys who were like these sort of manly men who really, they were hunters and they were fishermen and they were doing all of these things to sort of like not dominate's not the right word, but to control nature in all these ways, but they still had this deep love and appreciation for it. And then it seems like 60s and 70s come along and the whole countercultural movement just like puts their arm around environmentalism and says, no, this is our stuff. And now you can't care about conserving animals and whatever and consider yourself to be a more traditionally minded person. It's a ridiculous lie.
Yeah, I remember the first time I realized that a lot of those that you said, those, you know, historical environmental figures that you have in your mind, like were the hunters, the conservers, the national parks were started right. That way. I was like, oh, I didn't know they were conservative minded. I didn't know that traditional. So yeah, I feel like that's also a, you know, something that's lost in context and misinformation.
Well, if anything, I feel like, I mean, from my perspective, I think I started caring about the environment a lot more when I had my conversion to faith, because I take God's command to be good stewards of his creation pretty seriously. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that I am going to be going to be out there chaining myself to an oak tree in the national park. But it also means that I should understand why somebody's even going to do some of those radical things, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think we might have said this on the last episode. It's a Scott Hahn quote who said it. I'm sure he got it from a saint at some point. But basically what he says is, even in all sin, there's a desire for goodness. But I think it's in all action, there's a desire for goodness, right? And even if those people are doing these things that I think are ridiculous, and I mean, you know, you have environmental terrorists and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
They're still doing this thing that at root is a positive, that their goal is a positive one, which is to protect the environment. But I think that there's this big lie that pervades a lot of that says the environment must be protected from human beings, and we can only do that by removing people from the environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's interesting because if you go like to the beginning of Bible history, we see like when God does entrust humanity with the world, with creation, he's like, you know, you are the stewards of this creation. I need you to take care of it. And I need you, you know, to name the animals and like garden and hunt and all these things and like make this your home. And then I think in that there's a huge responsibility for us to truly like understand what we're doing that impacts the environment and how we can like better take care of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's a secret on the show. I talk a lot about this. I'm a big time hunter, right? Every year, we usually harvest 4 deer a year. Wow. And that keeps my family fed. I hunt ducks. I raise chickens and turkeys and bees. Cool. And all these different things. And we've done that for a long time. And people think that, oh, that's because, you know, you're a man and men like to hunt and you're trying to be manly. But it started, like, I do enjoy it, right? It would be a lie if I said I didn't enjoy doing these things. But it started because I wanted to, we wanted to live healthier lives, and my wife and I had a really serious issue with the way that animals were treated in the whole factory farming system. Yeah. Right. And I didn't feel like I was being a good steward of God's creation if I was helping fund, you know, these pigs and cows and chickens that live these miserable, horrible, disease-ridden lives and are then slaughtered so that I can eat them. But I didn't want to be a vegetarian, right? Mm-hmm. I said, I still want to eat meat. And so my wife and I literally like sat down and mapped out our life. And for the past decade or so, I don't think my kids have eaten any animal products in our home that we weren't personally responsible for.
No way.
So yeah, it's cool.
Wow.
It's
really cool. See, I love those stories because that's like a direct solution that up to a problem that was close to your heart. And right. You said, I'm going to create this. I can't find it here. Or it might be more, a little bit more difficult to like, you know, source it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it myself. I love that. That's so cool.
Well, I don't feel like we have to make this distinction between, that's why I said a second ago, like I want to make it really, really clear that I enjoy it. I do like it. I like going out. I like hunting. I like sort of that matching wits in the woods and trying to figure out, you know, how to get this animal. And I usually do. I hunt for the bigger ones, right? I mean, I go after the older males that they absolutely look pretty when I take a picture of them. But we use every single piece of that animal back at the house when we're done with it. And I think that there's a distinction that needs to be made between like observing nature and participating in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is a lie to pretend like we, because we have air conditioned buildings and all this stuff, that we're not a part of nature, because we still are in nature, whether we want to be or not. And I think actively participating in it is healthier and more rightly ordered than passively participating in it by just picking up meat and eggs and milk 100%. At the grocery store.
Yep. 100%. I honestly feel like that's the reason why we are in the world we live in, where the majority of the people, I don't know if the majority, I don't know what the statistics are, but a lot of people mm-hmm. think that the vegetarian and vegan diet is healthier for the environment and for yourself.
I really want to get into that.
Because yeah. we're so disconnected from our earth and from where our food comes from. I think that's the biggest problem.
Right.
We don't even know where our food comes from. So of course you're thinking, oh, okay, I'm not going to eat the cow or I'm not going to eat the deer. So instead I'll just eat these veggies. And like people don't know that that's actually far worse.
So talk about that. I'd love to flesh that out a little bit.
Yeah. So I think it's important to understand that every ecosystem on earth needs animal products. Every ecosystem needs animals to evolve. Mm-hmm. And so if you're eating just a plant-based diet, your veggies are coming from a veggie farm, let's say, it still needs animal products to come to the farm. And it, there's like no biodiversity, like you're disrupting the soil. Right. There's no birds in the trees. There's no, it's like a, basically a monocrop of, let's say, carrots or lettuce. It's nothing like an animal farm that might have the animals being rotated. Different animals, like you just said, turkeys, chickens, cows, right. All of it being in union together. And then also like the hooves aerating the soil, like all of that, the animals need to be on the land to actually like create healthy, biodiverse, nutrient rich soil.
Do you know Joel Salatin?
No.
Do any of you know Joel Salatin? So he's big into this sort of sustainability movement, and he's been really influential on us and everything that we've done on our farm. And it's the same thing you're talking about. We're working with the natural processes instead of against them. We're not trying to dominate nature and force it, like bend it to our will. We're trying to say, hey, this is how nature works. So we're gonna cooperate with this. And just one of a thousand examples is we use chicken tractors. Mm-hmm. It's essentially a giant cage with no bottom on it, right? That's on wheels. And I move it the length of the cage every day. And those chickens, they eat the grass, they eat the bugs, they scratch it all up. And then the next day they move on to the next spot. They poop in it, right? And that fertilizes the soil. And then it takes about a year to go down and back a couple of times, right? In this big field that we have.
Wow.
And then the next year you rotate fields and you plant stuff there. And from those chickens doing their thing, you've got this rich, awesome soil. It's just really cool.
So you're basically regenerative farming.
We're trying to.
That's cool, we're John
imperfect,
Henry.
Imperfect for
That's
sure.
That's amazing.
And we're trying to get plant products to be, we're trying to handle plant products better than we have, because we still buy, we don't purchase any animal products, but we still buy we buy fruits and veggies from the store, and we're trying to move away from that for that same reason, because those fruits and vegetables are being produced on these big monoculture, right? Where they clear cut all of this land and then they turn it into, you know, thank you, Ben, a pesticide and herbicide ridden wasteland so that they can grow a whole bunch of corn and nothing else. And that's dominating nature. It's not working with it.
No, it's not.
So one thing I want to, kind of touch on is like my family, we live in a subdivision in like the middle of a super populated area, and my dad's not a hunter. He doesn't really enjoy that.
Right.
None of us are really fans of that. And so the way you're talking about like growing your own stuff and going out and hunting your own food, it's not really something that we are interested in,
right,
or kind of an option to us,
right,
at the moment. And so what we've done is we're trying to kind of move in that same way, but we found a local farmer, and we and another family that we know split a cow. We bought a cow from him. He took care of it, processed it, and now we split all of the products from said cow.
Right.
And so I think that, and that is kind of going back to a thought I had of how we used to do things. Is used to your town created all your food, and you had the farmer in the town, and you had the shepherd, and you had all these people that it was their designated job to kind of produce the food, and everyone would pay them for their work, and that's how you would get things. Is you'd get the raw products, and for things like one thing my mother has really started to do is make bread, because it's really easy to do. If you've never made your own bread before, it's incredibly easy and it's delicious. So much better than any store-bought bread. It tastes so much better, and it's so much better for you instead of buying these pre-processed things that are easier, but bread's not that hard.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah.
I love that. Like
well, it all plays that's into, cool. I mean, it's just a sign of the brokenness of the system we live in. Just the corporatized everything. And I'm eating stuff that was grown in California and then shipped to Vietnam to be packaged and then flown back on a freight over here to San Francisco, where
how
it was
many
put
days old
across
now?
The, driven across the country to go to the Kroger next to me. And I just think that I understand that we have a world to feed and there's billions of people on it, but I think there's better things that we can actually do individually that are really positive.
Yeah, and see, that way of farming is actually scalable. If more people like you, Ben, started saying, oh, I want to do that too, there would be demand. You would be surprised as how many farmers around the world and producers want to shift into a more regenerative farming technique, but they just can't because the demand isn't there. We're not there yet. So like more people need to be like, yeah, I actually do want to provide income and economy to my local butcher or to the local person who's like giving me, you know, my milk or eggs or whatever, but it's not there yet. And so we need to raise more of that awareness for people to say, yeah, actually, that's actually more healthy. And for me, for my body and for the environment.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put you on the spot over there, ladies, Mackenzie in particular, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, regenerative farming particular or anything, but what are your thoughts on this? Like why are you here? Your idea on environmental sustainability and all of that, dig into it for me.
Well, I found out I was going to be on this episode like a couple hours ago.
And you're killing it so far.
No, but I think it's really interesting because I haven't really growing up, it was always like, you know, you take care of the earth, that kind of thing.
Right.
But it wasn't something that was super, like, I gave much thought into it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, as I've gotten older, my mom has started to become more, like, non-toxic. Like, she's all about that kind of thing because it, like, affects the things, like, I don't know, just the way your body works.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's, like, started, like, gardening more and, like, you know, gardening those like veggies and fruits and stuff because they usually do just get pumped with stuff and like make it super big and like have all these like toxic. I'm not super knowledgeable on all the what's actually in them, but
well, I'm not saying another word till break, so good luck filling the gap.
Grace, what are your thoughts?
Okay, I was gonna say I'm not super knowledgeable either. I was just telling Christine, like, the only background I have in this is an introduction to environmental studies. Science, yeah, environmental studies at my college that I took last year, and I was barely paying attention. My professor liked to ramble on. But I think growing up, especially, my dad and I love the ocean. We snorkel, we dive. And so growing up, just seeing, like, during, like, the tourist seasons when people would come in just kind of trashing the beaches and things, or we're snorkeling and there's just trash, like, literally drifting through the water. Not only is it an eyesore, but you also know, like, that's endangering animals' lives and even, like, people's lives. If you go down the chain, like, if we're hurting the animals, then, you know, our food supply and even just other food chains will be depleted, and that's not good. So there's like little things like that just like drive me crazy. So it's made me more aware and made me want to be more conscientious.
Hey, Ben, you know how Christine was just talking about sharks getting their fins removed?
I do know that.
You know what's not very much like that at all?
What?
Subscribing to Honest to God. It's the opposite. Yeah. Because it's really good for the environment.
And for sharks.
I mean, I don't know if we're going to tie the success of our show to sharks. I feel like there's some phobias we got to work out.
I would.
With some people there. Fine. You know what? Every time we get a new subscriber, another shark is born. Sorry. I feel like it's not a great sell.
Every time a bell rings.
No, but please do. If you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, make sure you like us. Make sure you subscribe. Give us 5 stars. Whatever thing you can do to make us feel good about ourselves here on Asagon, please do that, right?
We really
Grace is having a rough day. And you know what would make Grace's day better?
If you subscribe.
Yeah, 100%. So do it. You have to. Look at Grace. Look how sad she is. This is awful.
And share with your friends.
Absolutely. all right. So I want to jump back in environmental sustainability, and I want to talk about some practical stuff. But first, off air, Patrick, you were talking about sort of a spiritual aspect that we should probably get into because that's like what we do here at Honest Again.
Yeah, I mean,
real quick. Sorry, there's an audio. Just by. Yeah, that fixed it.
Was it me? Was I the audio glitch?
No, it happens every now and again. Okay. We're good. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say, so Genesis lays out how the pattern of the world works. And so I take the spiritual truths of things over the material truths first. So if you can work out that pattern or relationship, everything else in your life will basically fall into place, including the environmental and all your relationships. So as an example, I mean, like we were talking about before, is God gave, he created this world for us, right? So we're the intellect that perceives this world, that works with it. And so we're a part of it. And so, you know, he gave us work, right? Like he said, you're going to name the animals, you're going to live amongst it and to honor and glorify me. And so after the fall, it kind of mimics in the same manner of like a lot of these environmental crises we're having, and that, you know, one thing that happens is the world begins to hurt us, like through, that's when they start running through the thorns and stuff like that, and it gives them a garment of skin. And the garment of skin, as in a way, you can think of as something like technology, because it shield, it gives us, it extends our ability of something, and so we forget. But when we're in that garment for too long, it may, we forget how the world really works, right? Like we forget that the thorns hurt us, or we forget that, and then, and so when you look at these as these patterns, you start to realize that you know, they kind of scale at different levels of reality. But then, you know, then sacrifice is something really important too. So I know we a lot of the environmental talk and stuff like that is, you know, compassion towards animals and making sure we treat them correctly and stuff like that. But we also have to remember that, you know, death is part of the cycle. Like the 100%. Like we have to sacrifice. So in a way, the cow in its nature, to a certain extent, like he or she like wants to be sacrificed
right,
in order, because it becomes more part of us. So when you eat something, it becomes part of your body, right? And so you have like this communal aspect to it. And so like sacrifice, so some of these things about, you know, tying yourself, like chaining yourself to trees or not wanting to hurt animals, I think is also a misunderstanding of what sacrifice is, sure, and how it works, mm-hmm, right? So obviously you have to kill something, like particularly the living thing, in order to eat it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that it's like just understanding these patterns help. And so like if a scientist or something comes out and says some data points and stuff, if it doesn't, to me, if it doesn't fit into those patterns, I don't know where you're basing your information off of, right? Like, I don't know what it is. And I think traditionally, I mean, that's how science worked. Like you would look at the, you would work through the spirituality and look, and then base the material science you find off, like off of that spiritual truth, right? And so that's why you have now sometimes like scientists, I saw this guy in the Irish news channel that said, the first thing we need to do is cut off all meat to save the planet. Like we have to stop producing all livestock, all meat. And then slowly we'll phase out the vegetables and it'll all become lab-based food. It's like, man,
perfect.
And it's like,
that's score. The answer,
but,
right.
But it's like,
wow.
Like he's so, right, like blinded, like I said, by his garments of skin, that he's like floating up off on top of the world. And it's like, dude, you're forgetting that you're part of this planet, right? Yeah. Like bring yourself back down to reality.
And that's the key. I spent last night in a tent with my family and some friends of ours, right? We're out, you know, it's one of those like pre-made drive-in campsites or whatever. And I don't like camping, right? I don't like camping. I don't like hiking. I do a lot of camping. I do a lot of hiking. But I do them not as ends in themselves, but as means to an end, right? So I do a ton of camping because there's a lot of deer that live on that barrier island, and it's hard to get over there. And so I've got to spend a day taking a boat over there. There's no house on there. I'm going to build my little camp, and I'm going to spend the night, and then I'm going to spend the next week hunting over there, right? So I camp as a means to an end. And I'm talking about this because of what you just said about participating in nature, because we are a part of nature. Right now, we are participating in nature, right? We're not above, we're not beyond it. Right. And I think that observing nature is great. Hikes are awesome. Go on a hike. That's good for you. Right. Camping's fun. Do that. Whatever. But it's not participating in it in the same way that you are if you are foraging for morel mushrooms. Right. If you are going out to, and this sounds bad from an environmental perspective, but it's not, right. If you're going out there to take things from nature for the sake of your own consumption, for the sake of your own use, that is rightly ordered. You just have to do that in a way that respects the nature, right? So once again, I had an issue with the way the animals were treated, but my reason or how we solved that problem was not, we are not going to eat any animals, because animals, and this doesn't sound really politically correct, but it's true. A lot of animals are put here for us. This world is put here for us, right? And so I'm still going to go out and I'm going to find the deer and I'm going to shoot the deer, and the deer's going to die. And I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to take the deer back to my house and I'm going to empty out the deer and I'm going to separate it into parts that are usable and not. And I'm going to break it down and I'm going to feed it to myself and my children, right? Because that's what the deer is for. And that is okay. And I give a ton of money to Whitetail Unlimited. I'm really big into all these conservation movements. And I can love the species as reflections of God's creation or as parts of God's creation and still kill the animal and feel totally at peace about that, because that's why they're here.
Well, that I mean, these things are talking about scale and like these patterns kind of relate to everything, right? Like the same thing with, I mean, I was on the podcast about art, but it's the same thing with art. It's a participation, right? So, you know, if you look at a vegan, they look at a deer that's supposed to just exist out there, right? It's just supposed to be there in right. the wilderness and enjoy things. And that's the same way now we view art. Art is just supposed to be in the museum and we just go look at it whenever we please, right? Mm-hmm. Like it just exists on its own. But like a true full relationship with the world is making it a part, like participating in it. So, you know, in the art episode, I mentioned like participating with certain cultures or traditions that may exist in the country or town. Same with food. You participate with the wilderness by foraging from it or sure. growing a garden or something like that. It's all about participation with that reality. And okay. but, you know, with the secular world, you're seeing a more... like you can say the fruits of it, you can see as a separation from the world where it's leading to something like transhumanism, right? Like their solution to all of this is let's just put on the VR goggles. And so like, we don't have to exist in the world at all. We can just exist in our own world that we create in our, like this fake world. Right. And so you see that, you see, so like everyone, I noticed this being now more involved in like Catholic parishes and stuff. Most of them have farm or have like a community where they're involved with hunting or various things or homeschooling, whatever. And there's these communities that are built where people are truly living life. And on the opposite side, you have this super separation where all the friends are within Instagram, you're dating on apps, you're separating yourself. Soon you're going to put on the goggles because you want to look that, right? And so
or you're it's like you, the veggie patties.
Or the lab, the lab grown meat, which is a terrifying thing.
Yeah, but exactly.
Nature.
It's not the cow. The cow isn't the problem. It's the how. I would like to say that.
Yeah. And the cow, the cow being consumed isn't the problem, right? Because nature does not, it's not saying nature is not good, right? But I'm saying that nature does not exist for its own sake, right? Nature was created for us and it's okay for us to participate in it. And I think it's good and natural for us to participate in it in really visceral ways. Good Friday, we ate a bunch of fish that we went out and caught that day. We spent the day on a boat. We caught a bunch of fish. We took all the fish home and then we ate them on Good Friday. And it was the best. I mean, I'm getting all the practical stuff too about why spirituality aside, right? It's good. It's fun. It's good for children. It's, it gives them a healthy respect of where their food's coming from and what is required for their own existence that I think is really important. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, we make it better too. I mean, the, if you look at the difference of a wild strawberry and the strawberries we have today, right? Like we've improved it. And so like a wild strawberry is not nearly as sweet or as big or as like colorful as the ones that we have just like, you know, created this relationship with and learned about in order to make the most delicious and best strawberries, right?
I do recommend Indian strawberries, though. We forage a ton of them. Like, I'm big in the foraging, too. Yeah. Like, every season, my son has 36 hours where I don't let him eat food from my house. He has to go find it in the woods.
Oh, my gosh, I love these things you do with children. So this is amazing.
And last year, he ate a ton of wild lettuce, a ton of wild onions, a bunch of crickets, a couple of doves that he managed to shoot. I mean, it was in the season. And it was great. Oh, and then he found some chanterelle mushrooms, which is like the best thing in the world. And they're one of the only ones that I'll let him collect, because if you just go out and eat mushrooms that you're not sure about, like you could die. So I like my kid. I don't have life insurance on them. So like we need him alive. But it was super cool. So
when you're talking about this, like bringing up like a lot of respect and things like from your, like for your kids' perspective on the world around them, I think that's really important, especially looking at food waste, like we've been talking about. If we look at like the before meal blessing, like bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord, amen. Right. Like it's from God, and recognizing that, whether it's through hunting or farming your food or just like being more environmentally sustainable in those things, we can be better stewards of like what is truly coming like from God. Like we're saying it, animals are good, but they are good for us.
Right.
And then being grateful as you're killing and the deer or whatever and cutting it up, being grateful to God that thank you for bringing this animal to me and allowing me to feed my children.
So I might have told this story on the show before, but it's a good story and it's perfect with what we're talking about. So I'm not one of those guys who said, like, God spoke to me in that moment. I don't say that very often, right? I don't feel God speaking to me a lot. And that's okay. Like, I'm down with that. But this happened to me last September, the Tuesday after the deer opener, right? So I'm in the woods, and I'm, like, 25 feet up in a tree, and I'm looking for this one deer in particular, right? And I know that he's out there. I had a couple of pictures of him on a trail camera, and I think he's going to walk through this area about 4 hours later. Right. So I go there, I get prepped, I get way up in a tree, and I think I'm going to be sitting there forever. And the wind was wrong. I was sweaty. It was just nothing was going great. So, but I'm sitting there and I'm praying a rosary, and like 2 hours before he's supposed to show up in broad daylight, this guy comes strolling in, a big, beautiful deer comes strolling in, stands broadside at like 20 yards. Wow. Like, it was dumb, right? It didn't make any sense for this deer to do this. I shoot him with a bow, and this never happens. Usually when you're bow hunting, the deer runs off and you go find it, right? But he drops like a sack of potatoes right there, right in front of me. And I'm just amazed that this is happening. And so I'm saying my little prayer to God, right? And my little thank you prayer. And I swear I heard very distinctly God say, that's not you. That's not for you. That's for your wife. Now go home. It was like, stop obsessing over this thing that you have that you enjoy, right? Go work on your primary vocation. Anyway, it was really cool.
You heard that. Insane. Yeah. Oh my gosh. What a beautiful story.
I listened and I went home, and I didn't hunt again until December, where I got another one. He's pretty nice.
I feel like you're going to be good friends with my brother-in-law. I would love to meet your brother-in-law.
So let's talk practically. Right. Let's talk just practically. What can you do? Because once again, everybody doesn't live the life I live. Everybody doesn't have the ability to participate in nature as easily as some of the people in this room do. What does that look like? What can I do right now if I'm a college student, if I'm a 20-something, 30-something, to have a positive relationship with my environment and to, I guess, push us as a culture, as a society, more towards environmental sustainability in whatever form that is? What are your thoughts, Mackenzie?
So, okay, go ahead.
No, I would love to hear, actually, because I'm learning.
Mackenzie's always the one that I call on anytime it's quiet. And I think it's really funny. And you normally kill it off the cuff. But all right, sorry, Christine.
All right, so I'll say two things. Number one, if you want to care about the environment, protect the environment, you 100% need to know where your food is coming from. This what we've been talking about this whole time. Go to your farmer's market, support your local farmers. Even if you don't live near a farm, there's farmer's markets everywhere. So support them in that way. Know where your food's coming from. Ask, even if you don't know, like I ask all the time at restaurants, where's this fish from? It doesn't, you know, it might feel awkward, but just be more like conscious about knowing where your food is coming from. And then the other thing I'd say is just go outside and again, participate, put your feet in the soil, smell the earth. Go on a hike, get in the water, get in the river, just like actually be a participating human on earth and understand. Because the more we do that, the more we fall in love with our ecosystem and our earth around us. And the more we fall in love, we're going to say, oh, I actually want to protect this.
Well, and doing real things, whatever those real things are, go such a long way. Ben and I had a long car ride together the other day, and we were talking about, you remember this? We were talking about video games, and you were saying,
yeah.
I've been playing way less video games. Uh-huh. I've gotten into rock climbing. I've gotten into 100, all these different things.
And it's fantastic.
And it was all these real things that you were doing. And it's because, once again, we are corporeal beings, mm-hmm. right? We do exist in this world that's made for us. Experience this. Mm-hmm. And that gives us a much deeper appreciation for it and might make us more likely to move further to where we're participating more fully in it.
Right.
What other stuff, practically speaking?
I've got one. Make bread, like I mentioned.
Yeah, I love that.
It's this bizarre thing that like I've never, like, you know, like a dinner roll. Like a dinner roll like you buy from the store, like frozen in a package. Those are great. They're delicious. I'll eat a ton of those. They're probably not great for me. But if you make a dinner roll, it is so much better. And I've never experienced this before until my family started making bread, is that just a slice of plain white bread is like the best thing ever. Just one slice. It doesn't need to have anything on it. Just a warm piece of bread. I've never just picked up a piece of bread out of a package from the store and just eaten that.
I love this passion for bread.
It's great.
I liked your point about it maybe not being as convenient, but being mm-hmm. important. Because I think in this culture, and even personally, if it's convenient, like I'm going to go the convenient route every time if I can. But I think going out of your way, even in small ways when you can, like
going out of the way of convenience in order to like help out the environment, whether it's like picking up trash when you're walking through the park and like, you know, there's a plastic bag tumbling a little tumbleweed, or using reusable bags, using more sustainable products, like with feminine products, things like that, that can save like a lot of waste from the environment.
100% reusable water bottle. Yeah. Carry those things around.
I'm not going to lie. I did feel a little bad about myself when I had my large get set down right here. I literally looked right past it and I saw plastic free national park.
Yeah. Come on, John Henry, next time.
No, but recycling is a big piece of it too, right? I mean, I do think that I'm not going to go off on it. Like I'm going to fight not to do this, but recycling, I'm a big believer in recycling as well, except for paper, because paper comes from trees, right? I grew up in an area surrounded by tree farms, and what I've seen is paper prices have fluctuated. I've watched those trees that were growing for 12 to 20 years be clear cut and replaced with cotton farms or peanuts or, you know, any of these things that become that same sprayed and manicured monoculture that is so abhorrent to the environment and so unnatural for us. I liked what you said about bread because it is even though I can't like point to why that is a great thing. I mean, we can talk a little bit about the impact of, you know, talking about shipping foods and all these stuff, but it's taking even just one step backwards in the chain of where does my food come from?
Right.
And that's what's important, I think.
Making it at home.
And I mean, it's another form of participation with it too. Like you're refining that which you received. Exactly. I mean, I think this goes with bread and what Christine was saying about the way your diet, I think, in general, how your food is the majority of what you can do, right? Like, so if I've done this for various reasons, but I mean, my main diet consists of butter, meat, milk, like whole raw milk, and I barely eat any vegetables. Like, those are the three main food groups I eat, but just, you know, that gets rid of all the processed stuff. So you're automatically like cutting out a lot of trash and from the environment, from within yourself. But then you also become interested in where you start getting that stuff from. So, I mean, most of my products that I get is from either local farms or, you know, when I meet people in my parish, which that's another thing, is getting more involved in the community. And you can learn where people do different things. So, like, I recently learned that at my parish in San Francisco de Sales is a pig farmer, and he sells... Cool. He gets different breeds of pigs, and you can buy them off of him. So there's like another step to learn of what you can do as well.
Nice.
And if you ever have the opportunity to go check out any little sustainable homestead or anything, go do it. My wife has a less adventurous palate than I do, but it's gotten more adventurous since we've been doing this for the last decade. My rule with my son, I have a almost 11-year-old son, is you can go outside and you can shoot and trap anything that's legal to shoot and trap, but you have to eat it, right? You have to eat as much of it as you possibly can. And so my freezer currently has raccoons, squirrels, beaver.
No.
I've got wild turkey. We've got quail. We have deer.
Oh, my gosh.
I think there's still probably some wild hog in there. Like, and we have all these ridiculous things in there. Right. And we're learning how to make use of them. Because he's like, no, I'm gonna do this. And he has to do everything. He goes out with a little knife and does all of his.
Good for him.
It's cool. It's really cool.
Do you recommend any homesteads in Georgia area, Atlanta area?
So,
to go check out? Because I've been looking for some.
Carlton Farms is one that they do drop-offs in the coming area. I know that. I'm not sure where they're located, but they're big organic sustainability, everything. And the reality is it's going to cost more, right? It costs more to do that because...
But the more the demand, the price will go down.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the shortcuts aren't there for them. It makes sense because it is a lot easier to just chemically alter and forcibly subdue the environment, right, for the sake of convenience and making a quick buck. But they're pretty fantastic.
And if you think about the price, it's the most nutrient-rich food you could be eating. Right. So it should be that cost, you know, that price.
No, absolutely. But also, you can do it yourself. You can absolutely do it yourself. And farming, there's a little higher barriers to entry there. But in terms of hunting and fishing, those numbers are in decline. There are so many programs to try to get new people involved in hunting right now. Oh, wow. I participate in a ministry called Camo Ministries that's in Forsyth, Georgia. You know Camo?
No.
Oh,
it's just a cool name.
It's a cool acronym.
It sounds made up.
It's a, you can look it up right now, Grace.
We'll see it.
We'll put a link in the YouTube. But it's a ministry, right? So they do all of these. It's an acronym, Christian something something. It's that the whole thing is we're going to get young people into this. We want people to do this. And I did a first hunt with a bunch of older guys. These were middle-aged guys who'd never done it before. Last year. And it was a blast. Nice. And it was, there was a pep talk beforehand. You did all the safety stuff. Then you went out and you hunted. We got one deer. Not trying to brag, but it was my guy. And then they break it down. You eat that deer that night as part of the yeah. And then he takes the meat home. We package it all up there. It was amazing.
Wow. Yeah. I remember that was one my dad took me to, like, it's a father-son retreat in North Carolina called St. Joseph's Farms. Mm-hmm. And the guy's name is Joseph. Or no, it's not. I thought it was when I first
said it's not that named is, after that is false. Christ's stepfather. It's named after him.
But one of the first things you do really when you get there is the guy that run it, and he just runs it, like, at his house in his backyard, is they bring in a pig from a local farmer, and then they kill the pig in front of you.
Right.
And then show you how to process it right then and there. Like, they've got a bucket with, like, everybody gets a knife and goes, like,
oh my
it's gosh. A chore.
Like, back in the day,
and
that's how they would
eat
do
that
it.
Pig for dinner.
That's cool.
It's great.
Wow.
That's really cool. But there are a ton of organizations right now trying to get people back into all the outdoor skills stuff. There's also coyote in my freezer. Sorry. That's one of the
nice.
Coyote.
We predator trap for the sake of the turkeys and the deer. Mm-hmm. This time of year, we predator trap pretty heavily, and we don't eat all the coyotes that we kill, but we do every now and then take some, do jerky and do that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Not recommending that. Here, there's lots of bad things you can get from eating predators, but we try to make sure that we're on the up and up. All right, y'all. This was great. I'm sorry. I feel like I monopolized a lot of it. I talked a bunch. Does anybody have any parting thoughts?
Last thing I mentioned also is cosmetics. So, like, your emotions. So, like, for example, I learned recently that beef tallow, you obviously have to process it to get like the beef smell. But it does so much better than any of the, like, chemical or plant based products that you have as far as, like, moisturizer or anything like that. So
I
know
ghee.
Beef tallow always big. I mean, even I know it sounds weird, but you can put egg yolk in your hair and it does amazing. Obviously, when you, like, rinse it out, you have to use cold water because if you use hot water, it'll cook in your hair. there's like all these natural ways, like, you know, these products that we get from the earth, and specifically animal products that are also used in more diverse ways than just
like consuming. Burt's Bees instead of Bliss Tech and like for chapstick
and a lot of those like big that. Consumer brands are like the shampoos, the large brands or the toothpaste, they have the microplastics in there. So good plug there, Patrick. Yeah.
deer and bear tallow used to be used all the time. Bear tallow used to be the cooking oil. Like, that's most bears you hear about, bears being hunted almost to extinction in the eastern U.S. and stuff back in the day. They were not hunted primarily for meat. They were hunted primarily for fat, for the sake of cooking oil. Uh-huh. So people would buy bear oil and do all of that. But you can harvest all that. I'm saving all my deer tallow right now for a girl who makes candles. It's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was awesome, guys.
That was
a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I know we're running low on time, but we are gonna do Loaded Questions Junior. Because everybody loves Loaded Questions Junior.
Best part of the show.
Everybody. I really do, though, get people who say, like, they get upset every now and then when we skip a questions at the end.
My younger brother only watches the show for our,
the intro at the beginning
where we do fun facts and then loaded questions. He skips around.
Sometimes skips everything that is of actual substance.
Every now and again, he'll actually listen to an episode.
Yeah. Big shout out to you, Jude, if you're listening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. We're going to start with Mackenzie, just for fun.
What chore do you not mind doing? And I don't mind doing the laundry.
Okay.
Well, like, I'm hesitant to do it, but it's like if I had to pick one chore that I didn't mind, it would be that.
I'm all about the dishes, girl.
I know, me too.
I pop in a book on tape, like an audible book, and dude, I just roll. I can do dishes all day.
Dishes are easy for me. Yeah.
Least favorite.
My wife loves it because I do the dishes, and then I'm like, well, I should wipe down the counters. Oh, and now I should sweep now that I've wiped down the counter. But it's really just because I selfishly want to keep listening to my book the entire time.
That's a life hack.
Yeah.
Okay, what's one word your teachers would use to describe you?
Awesome.
I'm thinking maybe talkative. Because class participation is part of my grade. And if people are going to sit there in silence, I paid good money for this class. Okay. We're going to keep it rolling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dig it. What you got, Patrick?
What's the worst injury I've had? I went fishing with my dad and fell on my face on a rock and busted my lip here. Ow. Had to get a stitch.
Ooh. Oh, nice. This one. Yeah. All right, cool.
I've dislocated my knees 16 times.
16 times?
What 16. Were you doing? Yeah.
They just do that.
Oh, wow.
Just do it.
It's just something you do sometimes.
The joints are all backwards.
Do you wear a brace now?
No.
It doesn't sound healthy yet.
You
need some bear tallow for that. Okay, mine is, what is your favorite thing to do on a rainy day? I just love staying in bed and reading a book or praying. I just don't ever want to get out of my bed on a rainy day.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I swear there is something like in our brains from like leftover evolutionary whatever that when it's raining, you just want to curl up and not move.
Curl up.
Stay in the safe, dry, warm spot as long as you possibly can.
Exactly.
I love it because my kids are always good for an extra hour of being asleep in the morning if it's raining outside.
Really?
Yes.
That's good.
Cool. Yep. All right, Ben, what you got?
Me?
Producer Ben.
All righty. What do you think aliens look like? I am under the assumption and the hope. I think it would be more than a hope rather than an assumption, because I've seen like the photographs of aliens, and you know, they're just boring.
They're boring.
Every stereotypical. I hope all aliens look like Alf. I really do.
That'd be fun.
That'd be so fun if they were just these big fluffy things that ate cats all the time.
You know, the last episode of Alf, it got canceled unexpectedly, and it ends on a cliffhanger with Alf finally being caught by the U.S. government.
Really?
They made a movie, and they tried to retcon all this stuff, but as far as I'm concerned, Alf canon is it ends with him being experimented on by the U.S. government. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. What you got?
All right. I've got where is your favorite place to hang out?
Mm.
That was a good one. And I thought about a lot of these. My dad's bar that I grew up in and America's Georgia is a pretty good spot. But to keep it with the theme of all the outdoors environmental spot, there's a place on this new property that we're building this farm on. Mm-hmm. And if you follow the Big River up to the Second Creek tributary and then you follow the creek up, there is a spot that's too small to build a house on. Right. But there's two waterfalls that converge into the same creek. It's beautiful. And there's this big grassy area that's maybe, I don't know, 20 yards by 20 yards.
Uh-huh.
And it's the best place ever to propose to somebody.
Yeah.
Like if I were going to propose to my wife again, then I would totally do it there.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't make a lot of sense as a place to hunt.
Yeah.
But I hunt there a lot because it's just beautiful. It's just
sounds
a great,
like a
spot
great
to
place
hang out.
To like build like an outdoor chapel or something.
Yeah.
Like that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be pretty.
I want to do a... We've got this beautiful giant rock face, and I'm already talking to some of the other guys who are out there. It's a big property. It's a few hundred acres that we split up. We want to do like a Marian grotto,
nice.
Like way up on a rock face. It'd be this beautiful like work, I think, that would be like towards the good. And once you got it, I mean, you would have to literally like rappel to the spot. And that'd be cool. So,
that would be really
cool.
See.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to do an episode on aliens and Catholicism.
We need to get Dr. Paul Thigpen on
that
here.
Would be a
that
cool
would
one.
Be so cool.
And talk I can talk about that forever.
We definitely need to do that. You just read a space
like
trilogy.
I listening about it, not so much
Yeah, I did. I'm
it,
like 20 pages from finishing it.
I have lots of really strong opinions about aliens that I want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally. And what it means to have, like, whether or not they're persons or not.
Yeah.
And all the...
Do they have a soul?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
were they created by Christ?
Their salvation.
Because if they're capable of abstract thought, we have to convert them, right?
Yeah.
All right, sorry, we're not doing this. I know you're about to go off. We're not going to do it because we're already well out of time. We are going to do an episode on aliens. Get pumped for that one. And if they're not persons, I will eat an alien. 100%.
I will hunt one.
I don't care if it kills me from some weird moon disease, because they are on the dark side of the moon.
Be the best way to die.
It would be the best way to die. And I would be, for all history, I'd be the guy who found out aliens were poison and you shouldn't eat them.
Yeah.
All right. So with that in mind, we're gonna close out. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. You're listening to AM 1160 The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. This is Honest to God. Producer Ben.
Signing off.
Over and out.